Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.
Jujhar Khaira, the former Oiler, signed with Chicago today. Dmitry Kulikov, who was briefly an Oiler at the end of the season, has signed with the Minnesota Wild. The key moves by the Oilers today: Ethan Bear traded to Carolina for Warren Fogel. Cody Ceci signed 4 years, $3.25 million per year. Zach Hyman signed 7 years, $5.5 million per season. Tyson Barry is back, 3 years, $4.5 million per year. Derek Ryan, who we're going to hear from in about 45 minutes, two-year deal, $1.25 million. The former U of A Golden Bear will once again be playing home games in Edmonton. Well, I always appreciate getting texts. Obviously, a lot of listener feedback tonight with it being a big news day for the Oilers. I always appreciate the texts who are, I don't mind emotion, but if you can put some logic or reasoning behind it, it's more likely I'm going to read those on air rather than if you just type in with name calling or insults that don't really go anywhere. And if you can make me laugh, you really have a good chance of getting your text read, such as this anonymous person didn't put a name or a handle on it. Here we go. It gets better as it goes on. So just give it a second here, and then I'll get to Jason on the phone line. This texter says, Reed, I wish we could have won a cup with Bear, love him, but also with Ryan Smith, Gagne, Hendricks, and many more. As hard as it can be, sometimes organizations have to make changes. Really loved Duncan Keith since day one, wishing all these young guys the absolute best. And if they ever need an old guy who can't do crossovers, give them my number. I'll lie in front of every shot for the next 4 years for a Mercedes Sprinter van. I'm 6'4", 235-ish. Do I have to wear skates? So he'd be willing to be paid with a van, which I don't even know if there's a rule under the NHL CBA for being paid with vehicles. Good size, 6'4", 235. I do believe you have to wear skates. So we'll just leave that there and see where the scouting report goes with that individual. The hotline is presented by CertainTeed, professional-grade building materials. Is this thoughtful Jason on the line? I know there's a Jason that's called that's always very, very thoughtful and thorough. Is this you, Jason? I hope so.
Well, I hope it's me.
What's on your mind?
I was kind of laughing about your lineup combination with Nuge centering Hyman and Cassian. I just don't see Nuge isn't strong enough to be a center. I've always thought of him as a winger myself, so I leave him with. I'm thinking Hyman on a left winger with that shoots right with McDavid. McDavid's going to get 150 points, and you know I would. It wouldn't surprise me to see Hyman get 50 goals. He'll play that. He's going to take Nuge's spot on the first power play because he'll be.
You know what?
It just gives it a totally different look because they always have those three left-handed shots, and then it's you know when Draisaitl was having to catch the puck on his backhand to switch it to his forehand to shoot. I mean that was a neat trick, but if you have that guy coming in off the point and he's a right-handed shot, like it's gonna. It'll scare the crap out of teams.
I'll let you finish here. I'll just jump in quickly. And it's interesting that's how you responded to the line combinations because I thought I would be more catch people off guard about Cassian being reintroduced to the top six because I wonder when we get there if they might give him another crack. And like I said, and maybe shelter Yamamoto from the expectations of having to be a top six winger for the time being. Like somebody said, oh, they're going to turn Yamamoto. I'm not saying they're going to turn Yamamoto into a checker. I'm just saying maybe Cassian gets another chance to get his feet moving in a top six role. But yeah, I think more likely Nuge is a winger, but he might play center sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But I mean, same thing with Cassian. I mean, they protected him because they want to try something, right? They're not going to, they would have just, otherwise, they would have just let him walk, right?
Right.
So I'm excited to see Zach on that top line with McDavid, because that's part of the reason why I think he left Toronto, is that, you know, as good as Matthews and Marner are, they're not as mature as McDavid and Draisaitl. Like, those guys are 200-foot players, and he knows that if I'm in the right spot, the puck, all I have to do is just have my stick in there, and it's going to be at me right now. Where Matthews and Marner's were looking to score, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. What's the biggest drawback on the roster for you right now?
Well, I mean, I kind of agree with you on the CC thing, but maybe they're bringing him in because the unknown quantity that nobody really knows about is what Bouchard did during the season, because nobody could see him, right? Like, even you guys that are connected to the team, you never even got to see a practice or nothing. So, like, who knows what they, like, when you go into the playoffs and they went with Jones and Bear, that might have been a hauling thing, said, look at Tippett, you got to run with these guys. And then he finally just pulled the pin on it and said, I'm not playing them. So now they're right. They're out. Right? Yeah. Like, that could have been exactly what was going on. Like, Holland said to him, like, these are who you're playing, and I don't care what you think. And then so Tippett did what he could and said, okay, well, they're not playing. So now both of them are gone. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's that much of a coincidence that those two guys didn't play and both of them are gone.
Yeah. We did get to go to the home practices. We did get to go to the home practices and morning skates, just to clarify that. But yeah, obviously Bob and Jack and those guys didn't travel this year for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was obviously different.
So maybe CC's being brought in to just as a buffer, and then Bouchard might end up taking that second spot.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Things will change throughout the year. No, good thoughts, Jason. I appreciate it, man. Please call again.
All right, take care.
Jason, 780-496-0063. Trent says, so Reed, are the Oilers a better team after today? Are they real contenders now? Building a team is always catching lightning in a bottle. But I'd wager some holes were swapped out today, but I still think we need a goalie for McDavid's career. Like, when you say Gretzky, you say Fuhr. Yeah, and that's an ongoing thing for me. And even if Mike Smith is really good the next couple of years, what happens 3, 4, 5 years from now? I mean, eventually Mike Smith is not going to be playing anymore at his age. Do they have that? And that's why I said, what if you would have grabbed this Wallstedt kid and you say, maybe we're going to hit the home run with him, right? Like, that's why I said this on Monday. That's why, if it's me, and I know they have more information about Wallstedt than I have, fair enough. But if it's me, if Wallstedt reaches his max potential, that's an absolute home run. If Borgeau reaches his max potential, that would be great, but I don't know if it would have the same impact on the franchise that a goalie would. That's my argument. I'm sure a lot of people see it differently, but that's why I would have leaned towards taking a goaltender. Who do we have? Ryan is on the line as well. Ryan, what's on your mind, man? Go ahead.
Well, that new team, the Seattle Kraken.
Yes.
Is that true that they named their new arena the Krakhouse?
Oh, my goodness. You've been thinking of that all week, haven't you?
I thought you'd get a laugh today.
Do you know what it's actually called?
Pardon?
Do you know what it's actually called?
No, I have no idea.
It's called Climate Pledge Arena.
Oh, isn't that something?
It is something, isn't it? But we might call it the crack house from time to time on this show if they'll let us get away with it. Do you think Bob Layton will get mad if we call it that?
Well, that sounds like a city in Saskatchewan, Climax.
All right. There we go. That's Ryan bringing the laughs tonight at 780-496-0063. Rick in the Park says the Oilers need another defenseman. They need a real third-line center. Derek Ryan more of a fourth-line center. Rick adds, I don't think there's anything available now for a real third line center, but so much happened today. Maybe I'm missing somebody. No, I mean, there's still some guys out there, but that's a fair comment. And Ryan Getzlaff got $4.5 million for 1 year in Anaheim. That's a pretty generous deal, I think. Let's get back to a couple clips from Ken Holland today. And we do have open lines, 780-496-0063. Ken Holland, here's what he said about trying to add a goalie.
Well, the only way I can get in the goalie market, Jim, is if I trade a goalie. I mean, Mike Smith's got a two-year deal at 2.2, and Mikko Koskinen's got a one-year deal at 4.5. So I could not get into the goalie carousel if you wanted me to, because of contracts.
All right, so I think he's basically saying unless he can trade Mikko Koskinen, he can't just go out and add another goaltender. It appears that that's Ken Holland's thinking there. He was also asked if he is done on defense.
No, not finished tinkering on the blue line. Probably, you know, we're looking maybe add one more guy, but, you know, obviously we've got Lagesson and we've got Chris Russell, so... You know, could possibly do something on one more guy. I'm not sure. I'm going to kind of let the dust settle here over the next couple of days and see where we go.
All right. So maybe still another add on the blue line for the Edmonton Oilers. We will get to a couple of comments, but we have a little more from Ken Holland, Tyson Barrie, Cody Ceci, Warren Fogle, all before the bottom of the hour. More on the Elks all-time all-stars that you voted on, Hector.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pothy is going to join us tonight, and we will have Derek Ryan on before 8 o'clock. Inside Sports on Chet. All right, Angie. Well, now you got to play Rock, Rock Till You Drop later in the show. Also by Def Leppard. Great band. D writes in, he says, do you think Ken Holland doesn't value goalies as much since he did win with Chris Osgood, who wasn't a superstar? I don't know about that. I think he values goalies. I think it's pretty obvious how important goaltending is in the NHL, or as I call it, the NGL, the National Goaltending League. How sick is everybody going to get of me saying that for the next few years, eh? Okay, thanks a lot for tuning in tonight. You can get a full recap of everything the Oilers did today in written form on the Oilers page on 630ched.com or globalnews.ca. We have been breaking it down for you as we move throughout the show. One of the first moves we saw today was the trade. Ethan Bear traded for Warren Fogle. Fogle a 2014 draft pick, Ethan Bear a 2015 draft pick. Fogle now up to 200 career games. He played 53 games this past season, had 10 goals and 20 points. So if he's kind of on that pace for the Oilers where he's 0.4 points per game on the third line, probably pretty good, more than the Oilers have had from a third liner really in a long time. He had this to say about this past season.
First off, I loved my time in Carolina. We had a great group of guys, and we had a great coach in Rod Brindamore. And, you know, we had a good team, and we fell short in the playoffs. But at the end of the year, like, we had some honest conversations with each other, and you never know what's going to happen next. But all I do know is that I'm extremely thrilled to be with the Oilers.
That's Warren Fogle. Frank Cervelli was on Stauffer's extended coverage earlier today. He and Mooner did a great job. They wound up being on from 10 until 3. And Frank Cervelli from Daily Faceoff, who's been breaking a lot of stuff lately, made a comment along the lines that maybe Fogle wanted more opportunity than what he was getting in Carolina. I would think he will get that here. He didn't really go too deep into that clip there when I asked him the question earlier today. But he did say, you know, we had some honest conversations. So maybe that is part of what led to the trade. Fogle also described his game like this.
I think I'm just a tenacious 200-foot player. I try to use my speed to, you know, take pucks to the net, draw penalties. And, you know, I like to play a hard-nosed game and you know, be reliable on the defensive zone as well.
The first time I ever really heard a lot about Warren Fogle was a couple of years ago. And there was, and it's an ongoing storyline here in Edmonton. There might be other talk show hosts on this station who talk more about it than I do. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. But about Connor McDavid not drawing enough penalties. The why aren't there more penalties called for infractions on McDavid? And at the time of that season, Warren Fogle was leading the NHL in penalties drawn. And a lot of the reaction was, who the heck is Warren Fogle? Well, now he's an Oiler, and if he can draw penalties here, great. But he's got some decent size, he skates well, and he goes to the net, which I think is important. He doesn't appear to be labeled as a perimeter player. So that's good news about Warren Fogle. Somebody texted me this morning of something about super bad. Can somebody help me? Angie, can you help me? You're a hip kid. I've seen the movie Superbad. Was the character's name Fogle?
It rings a bell, but I will definitely Google it and get back to you.
Okay. Somebody will text. Was that kind of the awkward-looking guy? Was he named Fogle? Or something close? I don't know. Somebody said, oh, you guys got Superbad. And I was like, what? Anyway. Tyson Barrie is back, the leading scorer among defensemen in the NHL last year. Really, again, kept the Oilers' power play at a really high level. He can pass the puck, he can shoot, and he talked about signing a 3-year deal. Well, he did say that, trust me. As you do we have the clip of Tyson Barrie? We might not have it. That's okay. Yeah, but I think the Oilers' power play should still be really, really good. Like, why wouldn't it be? And Hyman probably becomes the net front guy. I don't know if he's going to replace Draisaitl like that one caller said. He just might become the net front guy. And I think Puljujarvi will probably rotate in there as well. Like I said on the show yesterday, that Puljujarvi's a big body, and if he screens the goalie and gets in there with no fear, like Alex Chiasson often did, then I don't see why he wouldn't get some power play time as well. Yakushev says, good evening, Reed. Where is Pete Chiarelli these days? Love that guy. I think he was just about to do his best work when the Oilers shipped him out. Okay, Yakushev. I think he's working with the St. Louis Blues, isn't it? Okay, I guess McLovin's name was Fogle from the movie Superbad. Appreciate that. Scott in Calgary says, hey, Reed, very good day by Ken Holland. Fogle is an underrated pickup, even though I'm going to miss Bear. I always wondered how we were going to get bigger on defense, and now I know. Derek Ryan fills a big need at a good price, too. Even though I'm not thrilled with bringing back the same goalie tandem as last year, it might be something Holland might look closer into near the trade deadline. Yeah, and, you know, the roster isn't done. I didn't get an optimistic vibe from Ken Holland today about changing the goaltending situation. As he said, he still might do something on defense. And then, you know, we make a big deal about the opening day roster. Well, the roster then changes for the second game and the third game. I thought the caller that called in earlier, I think it might have been D, made a good point. The Oilers should be a playoff team. And if they are a flawed playoff team, then you got the opportunity to change something during the season. And if goaltender is the big flaw, then I guess you try to hit the Rolison-esque home run like the Oilers did in 2006. And I know you don't want me to talk about the past too much, but they might have to do something like that to try to alter the roster. This texter says, hi, Reed. Am I the only one surprised with the term Barrie signed for? Well, I don't know. No one else has expressed surprise about it. We definitely heard Barrie. I mean, this is the interesting thing. When the season ended, it sounded like Tyson Barrie was very unlikely to be back with the Oilers and that he wanted to shop around and he wanted at least a 6-year deal from somebody. And then we started to hear more in recent weeks, well, Barrie might circle back to the Oilers and the Oilers might circle back to him. And then even as recently as yesterday, it sounded like Barrie wants a 4-year deal. The Oilers only want to give 3. And then Barrie signs for 3 years. So, yeah, I guess you could be, I'm not going to stop you from being surprised, but the Oilers didn't want to make a long-term commitment there, and they didn't. He got a bit of a raise from last year. He made 3.75 last year. Now he's getting 4.5 per year. Okay, music time. That means the news and weather is coming up. We will have Derek Ryan on the show. He's scheduled to join us at about 10 minutes before 8, and we're going to talk to a classic, Hector Pothier, former offensive lineman. He's received a lot of your votes in our voting for the Elks all-time roster. We are going to do running back and offensive lineman today. Heck, Pothier is in the top four for O-line. Where exactly did he finish? You'll get the answer when we get back. All right, got a text message from Jim who says, I have to weigh in on the Bear trade. Terrible decision, particularly from a marketing position. Look in the stands to see the support from the Indigenous community, not to mention Bear is potentially a top four defenseman. The move should have been to trade Cassian. Poor performance in the playoffs is an understatement. Attendance may be an issue over the next few years and in part pays these players big salaries. Big mistake moving Bear out. Very disappointed. So Jim didn't like the trade. That's fair. Jim, I appreciate the comment. Yeah, I mean, Bear is, he could have a really good career. We don't know. We don't know yet. Like I said, I think he was better the previous year than he was this past season. Probably an injury played a role in that. Jim, I will say this to you, Jim. I'm gonna just clap back at you a little bit. I'm always curious when somebody writes in like that and says they should have traded this player. Look how bad he played. So if you noticed and think that he didn't play that well, probably other teams noticed that, which means he's not very tradable. So just remember that. I think Ethan Bear did get incredible support from the Indigenous community. I think he earned it and deserved it. I think he was very strong and mature in the face of some incredibly nasty comments that I think 99.9999999% of us know are inappropriate and stupid, and he did a great job standing up to those. Do I think that trade alone is going to hurt attendance or marketing for the Oilers? I would say unlikely. But he did become a very popular player, and quite frankly, I wish him all the best. Okay, that was Jim at 780-496-0063. So we had this fun poll on our website last week where you could go on there, you could enter to win Elk season's tickets, and you could vote for the top four players in a position set in the history of the Elks. And at running back, we had some throwbacks there in the top four. Jim Germany was fourth, Jackie Parker third, Johnny Bright second, and Normie Kwong voted the all-time best running back. On the offensive line, well, we're going to discuss that. I'm pleased to welcome back to the show Hector Pothier. Hector, you're on with Reed. How are you doing?
Good, Reed. I guess that auto dial on the computer worked.
Yes, that's right. I gotta say, Hector, I know you and I do this from time to time, and it's always fun chatting with you. But one of my all-time favorite nights in hosting this show, and you probably remember, do you remember the night you and Tom Wilkinson came into studio for like an hour? That was so much fun.
Yeah, it was. I do remember that.
So let's dive into this. Here's the top four vote getters, offensive line from fans. Blake Dermott fourth, Bill Stevenson third, Rod Conniff second, and you, Mr. Pothier, voted by the fans as the best O-lineman in the history of the franchise. They remember you and they love you, buddy.
Well, I guess that's one thing about having a bald head and a beard. They remember you. Yeah, that was a long time ago, wasn't it?
But in all seriousness, that's gonna be pretty cool. That not just fans remember you, that they remember you as a great player. And I don't think it was just all quote unquote older fans voting. I'm sure people did some research and were like, yeah, this Pothier guy was pretty good.
That, no, I mean, I'm honored by it, of course. I mean, anytime you're remembered when you're at retirement age, that's pretty nice.
Yeah. Some of the other names, obviously, on the list, Conniff, Stevenson, Dermott. And I remember when Wilkie was in, he said that the entire O-line from the late 70s, early 80s dynasty should be in the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. I think some of you guys are in there, not everybody. But, like, what was your relationship like with the quarterbacks of that era? You know, specifically Wilkinson and Moon, who are remembered as two of the all-time greats themselves.
Well, I mean, they, you know, Warren and I were rookies together, so we came in and started the same year. And Wilkie was the veteran and the leader and led the team along with, you know, all those guys. I mean, that was a magnificent team. We had so many great players and such a good time to be a part of that, of the Eskimo franchise. Or I should now be saying the Elks, right?
Yeah, well, names going forward here. I think, what is the alumni going with? I think they're going to go with the EE alumni, but it's fine. What was the attitude of the O-line? Were you kind of like, we just got to keep Wilkinson and Moon upright as long as possible? Were you one of those O-lines and said, we got to be nasty and impose our will on the game? What was the group approach then?
Well, I mean, we used to tease Wilkie, you know, we had to play way better for Wilkie than we had to do for Warren, because Warren was an unbelievable athlete, could run like a deer, was strong as anybody out there, and, you know, was a hell of a quarterback physically. Whereas Wilkie, we used to tease him about being a short, stubby guy that you had to protect to make sure he didn't get killed out there, which isn't true. He was a great quarterback. He did everything. He did the underhand passes and the loop passes and just about everything you could do to get it completed, but they got completed and we won with them.
I mentioned the running backs being unveiled tonight as well, and some throwbacks there, Quang, Bright, and Parker. But Jim Germany, you would have been a teammate for Jim Germany. Tell us a little bit about him, his running style, blocking for him. And I'll throw Lumsden in there as well. I know he was the fullback, but you kind of had two really good guys back there.
Oh, Jim, I still, from my... looking back, Jim Germany was the ultimate running back we ever had. I mean, he could do it all. He could run, he could block. He was a great blocking back. You never had to worry about him missing his pickup or not being able to block a linebacker or somebody he was assigned to block. A real quiet, unassuming guy that was just a great, great football player. I really enjoyed him.
So when you guys worked on a blocking scheme, was the running back as involved in that as the guys on the O-line?
Well, of course. I mean, yeah. And that goes without saying all the time, because, I mean, they can send seven guys and we've only got five. So our running backs have to be able to read who's the outside linebacker, which one do we have responsibility for, because the O-line would take care of, the four down linemen, and we'd also take care of either the middle linebacker, or whichever way the play was designed, we'd have a specific linebacker, and then they would have to pick up the other ones. So yeah, they're a very big part of the running, even tandem. Sometimes it would be the running back and myself, doing a slip block on a running play on the weak side.
So let me ask you this, because the thing that I find so fascinating about football is that both teams call a play, and then it seems to me a lot of times the play doesn't work out that way for neither the offense nor the defense. So you always got to adjust and think and see what the other guy is doing. So when a quarterback, we always say, well, the quarterback's calling an audible. Is he changing the entire play, or is sometimes he just adjusting the blocking for the offensive line, the assignments, or do you guys do that yourselves?
Well, every play has its own blocking scheme. He is changing the play when he's audibling, but we then have to adjust who we were supposed to block, because depending on the play he called, it changes what our assignment is and where we're attacking. I mean, we could be going from a running play to a pass block or vice versa.
All right. You're going to like this. We do have a fan of the Edmonton teams. Well, actually, I'm not sure if he cheers for the Edmonton teams, but he calls himself Cowtown Bob. He actually might cheer for the Calgary teams, and I probably owe him a lot of money over the years. He says Hector Pothier should have received royalties from Warren Moon because he gave him so much protection in his young formative years in pro football. So that fan remembers you quite fondly, which is well deserved. But I mean, like you said it with Warren, he could run, he was strong, and then he went on and played in the NFL for almost 20 years. Did you think, okay, like, did he even stay in the CFL longer than he thought he would? Did you think, okay, he's going up, moving on at some point?
I'm sure every player that comes and has the potential to go to the NFL will take that, because there's a huge difference between making $50,000 or $70,000 or $80,000 or $100,000 a year and making, you know, $2 or $3 or $4 million a year. You know, that's just, that's an automatic, you would think. You know, if you can get to that team and you make it, then you know you're going to make a ton more money.
Hector Pathé joining us then at Inside Sports. Hector, just a couple more for you. We're doing this position talk every night this week. So I've asked this of Eddie Steele, and I asked this of J.C. Sherritt about their positions. I'll ask you this about an offensive lineman. If you have a young football player or a young offensive lineman, what are some really important qualities to have that if you want a young guy to turn into a great offensive lineman, what are the building blocks?
Well, I think number one, he has to have a real strong belief in himself to be able to compete with anybody. That confidence and that belief that you can get the job done no matter how big or how strong or what your opposition, you know, is. I mean, I often played better against the best players that I played against, like a Mike Walker or a Grover Covington or, you know, those, or even a James Parker when he was with BC, because that's your competitive edge. You know that if you don't play at your best against those guys, they'll embarrass you. And, I always found that those guys got me. I was never flat. Put it that way. I was never flat for a game when we was playing one of the top guys in the league.
All right. How would have Heck Pathé, the player, been with this long training camp with no preseason games like they're doing now? And I think when you played, there might have been 3 or 4 exhibition games, which seems excessive to me.
Well, you know, I, as a Canadian in Canadian college, I needed that training camp and I needed those games and I needed those live practices to get used to the abilities of the defensive linemen. Our Canadian, at that time, I mean, I think we've come a long, long way in football, in Canadian college, and a lot of guys play in the States. But the defensive guys that I played against in college did not have the technique and the abilities of a David Boone, you know, or any of those players. So, and a Ron Este and all those guys. So for me to have that practice, and even when we did defensive team, to be in against those guys specifically gave me a good chance to grow and learn and read the techniques that these guys had. So it was a big help to me to have that. Without it, boy, I think it'd be a lot harder to get better faster if you didn't have some of those skills.
Hector, I'm going to give the final word to Dean, who just texted in this message. Dean says, when I was 17 years old in 1983, Hector was in line in front of me at McDonald's, and he seemed like a giant. I was just a skinny kid. He was so nice and friendly. Fast forward 30 years later, I ran into him at Costco. He was still happy and friendly. The only difference, I was bigger than him. I figured it was diet time. So there you go. You inspired Dean twice in his life.
That's a nice story. Thank you.
Hector, I'm sure we'll do this again. I always love having you on the show. Thanks for hopping on. Congratulations on being voted the greatest O-lineman in the history of the franchise, man. We'll see you soon.
Okay, take care, Reed.
That is Hector Pathé. Always a blast. Yeah, he's voted the top O-lineman. Normie Kwong voted the all-time best running back. Tomorrow, receiver and quarterback. Derek Ryan from the Edmonton Oilers when we get back. Okay, thanks a lot for tuning in tonight. Appreciate those of you who enjoyed the interview with Hector Pauthier and all our free agency coverage today and the Oilers trade as well. And one of the new members of the Edmonton Oilers is not new when it comes to playing his home games in Edmonton, because for 4 years, from 07 to 11, he was a member of the U of A Golden Bears. He gets a two-year contract today from the Oilers. Derek Ryan is back on Inside Sports. Derek, how are you doing, sir?
Reed, I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
Well, I'm doing very well. You couldn't get enough of me and Stauffer, so you're coming back to Edmonton. So good for you for for enduring our interviews over the next couple of years. But in all seriousness, how does it feel? Why was Edmonton the landing spot for you?
I mean, there's lots of reasons. Today has been a pretty crazy day, obviously, with free agency. It's crazy for everybody. Two of the biggest check boxes for me going into free agency was I wanted to go to a place where I felt like I had a chance to win a cup. Edmonton checked that box for me. I feel like the Oilers have two of the best players in the world. I think shoring up the depth in the center group or the forward group around them is key, and hopefully I can provide that. And I think they have a lot of the pieces that can lead to some success in the regular season, hopefully some success in the playoffs as we try to chase the cup. I think it'd be pretty cool. So that was a big part of it. The opportunity that the organization, had for me, I feel like I just mentioned, the depth around Connor and Leon was a need for the Oilers. And I thought that was a good fit for myself. So hopefully I can slot in there and continue to provide the things I have in Calgary and in Carolina before that. And it was a good fit all around.
One thing that's been a positive for you is your faceoffs, 52% last season with Calgary and 55.4% for your career. Can you touch on why you think you've been so successful in the circle and how important it is to have that right shot option here with the Oilers?
Yeah, for sure. That's a big part of my game. I've taken it seriously all the way from when I used to play for the Golden Bears to now in the NHL. It's a big part of having possession. Hockey in the NHL in particular is a possession game. The more we can have the puck, the more we can do with it, the more offense we can create, the less offense we can have, from the other team in our end. So, that's a huge part of my game. I think there's more to it than that, hopefully, that I can provide, but that's definitely a critical element in the depth of the Oiler lineup is to have that right shot center.
What was it like for you the last 3 years being part of the Battle of Alberta, the 10 games this year, the fight a couple of years ago, the goalie fight game a couple of years ago? Tell me about being a part of the Battle of Alberta and now changing sides in it. That's kind of a unique situation for a player.
Yeah, it is. It seems like it's happened a little more often lately than I ever would have thought, with guys changing, flip-flopping from Calgary to Edmonton or vice versa. But, it's a special event. It's at the end of the day, it's another game in the regular season. It only counts for 2 points. But the Battle of Alberta is an emotional event, and it takes a toll on the players. We're aware of it, and we get pretty amped up for it. I can speak for that on the Calgary side. I'm sure it's the same on the Oilers side. And, yeah, I don't know. I've kind of witnessed it a little bit. As a fan, I guess, when I was playing for the Golden Bears, so I got to feel the energy of the city watching the Battle of Alberta. So I'm excited to be in Edmonton and be on the Oilers side for the Battle of Alberta. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Derek Ryan, new Edmonton Oiler, joining us tonight at Inside Sports. I got to give credit here to the source for getting these stats. Jonathan Willis writes for The Athletic. And he tweeted this out about you, that with the Flames last season, you were 12th among forwards in 5-on-5 ice time, but you were tied for 6th in even strength points per 60 minutes, and you led the team in Corsi 4%, shot 4%, goal 4%, and expected goals 4%. I know I'm throwing some stats out there, but do you pay attention to your own analytical stats and some of those so-called fancy stats? Is that something you as an NHL player thinks about?
It's not something I follow on a day-to-day basis. It's something I'm aware of now, just having gone through free agency, and it's funny you mentioned that. You know, a lot of the teams that were interested in picking me up or having me on their team were teams that are heavy into analytics. Because like you said, if you go on a deep dive on my analytics, then they're pretty good. So, it's not something, like I said, that I pay attention too closely to. Unfortunately, the goals and assists kind of get brought up more often, but, the people that are hiring us and writing the paychecks, they pay attention to a little bit more than just the goals and assists. So that's a good thing. And the hockey analytics are just growing right now. I think it's getting bigger and bigger, and more teams are looking into it more and more.
I got a text message from a former Golden Bears teammate of yours earlier today. His initials are LZ, and he said he was going to ask you if you're going to move back into residence at the U of A. Probably not. But, you know, just a thought on being an Edmontonian again. I mean, Zach Hyman said he flew out here last week and looked at some neighborhoods. You probably kind of know the city, and I'm not going to ask you where you're going to live, but you probably might have an idea or two here along the way. Just tell me about being an Edmontonian again here soon.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. It's a great city. I think it kind of gets a bad rap from a lot of the players in the NHL that don't know much about it. They just kind of fly in and you see downtown and that's it, but it's awesome. And I have a lot of friends there that are basically second family. So it's going to be a bit of a homecoming in terms of getting to see a lot of those people again. I've gotten a lot of texts from those people today, throughout today. And I'm pretty familiar with most of the areas where the families live in the Oilers, west of downtown or whatever. So my wife's been on the house hunt already, so we're excited to find a place and call Edmonton home again.
Derek, congratulations. We'll see you at training camp. All the best, man.
Thanks, Reed. Look forward to seeing you. Thanks for having me on.
Derek Ryan from the Edmonton Oilers. Get a full rundown of the Oilers day on 630ched.com. Stauffer Oilers now, noon to 2 tomorrow. I'm back 6 to 8. Thanks for listening.
630 Ched Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 Ched.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.